This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Not for nothing, but where does this economy, soon to be under new management, of course, where does it go now? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday today, the 9th of November. Good as always to have you along, everybody. Yes, stocks today. We will get there, I promise. But first, actual economic policy and where it might be going in a Biden administration. Because once you get past the coronavirus is the economy, there is lots else to do. To unpack it all, we've got Marketplace's Kimberly Adams on the phone from Washington. Hey.
Hey, Kai.
So hit me broad brush first, would you? What are they thinking over at Bush transition headquarters? Biden transition headquarters. Yeah, that's a whole different president.
Well, the Biden transition was ready to go. They've got their website up and running. And they're sort of dividing their areas of focus into these four buckets. You've got racial equity, COVID-19, climate change, and economic recovery. The plans for each of those categories, including a mix of the things a future Biden administration can do sort of on its own with executive orders, as well as some things he'll need help from Congress to do.
Yeah, I want to pick up on that whole Congress thing in a second, but I do want to talk about the coronavirus as the economy. It's got to be first on his list. What does he have in mind?
So the Biden team really wants to shift emphasis, whereas in the Trump administration, the President Trump really wanted states and in some ways the private sector to take the lead on responding to the pandemic. A Biden administration would do it completely differently, really centralizing the federal government, targeting resources, increasing investments in testing, PPE, setting up things like a pandemic testing board and a U.S. public health job corps that would employ like 100,000 people. And today, Biden met with his newly established COVID-19 transition advisory board, a lot of doctors and experts there talking about how they're going to deliver those resources with a special emphasis on older Americans and some of these minority communities that have been disproportionately affected by the pandemic.
Yeah, and he also talked about Native Americans as well, in addition, right? I mean, he was casting a wide net.
Yes, indeed, because a lot of these groups have really felt the brunt of the pandemic, not just in terms of the health effect, but also in terms of economic consequences.
Right. Well, let's talk about that economic fallout. And once we get past whatever the virus has in store for us to the recovery phase of this thing, what is his plan, I guess?
It looks a lot like a lot of the proposals we've seen coming out of the Democrats in the House as they've been pushing for their version of a stimulus bills. So things like extending unemployment insurance, again, more money to state and local governments to help limit layoffs, more money for small businesses, some emphasis there on racial equity as well. And I know this is like a running joke in Washington, but yes, infrastructure investments. But this infrastructure week has more of a climate change emphasis and making the economy more green.
Right. Okay, look, I need to throw a name at you here, and that name is Mitch McConnell. He possibly will control the Senate. We're obviously waiting on that January 5th runoff down in Georgia. But talk to me about what President-elect Biden is prepared to do executive order-wise that he can do with the stroke of a pen and what he needs legislation for, right? Because much as President Trump was criticized for executive orders, so too was President Obama with the whole pen and phone strategy.
Right. And the reason they keep using that strategy is because it works. And so there are a lot of policies that a president can change just through executive order and through regulatory changes throughout the executive agencies. And I think we'll see the first round of pandemic response coming through in that direction and getting out the door pretty quickly. But when it comes to those bigger things like extending unemployment insurance, like getting money to small businesses, he really needs the help of Congress for that.
Yeah. Super quick. I don't know if you saw J.P. Morgan came out today and said, yeah, we think a stimulus bill, a relief bill of like $1 trillion is going to what's going to wind up happening before Inauguration Day. Let's all remember that Mitch McConnell wants $500 billion. So I wonder if that passes your reality check.
No.
Kimberly Adams in Washington, D.C. for us, covering Congress and the politics of this economy. Thanks, Kimberly.
All right.
Talk to you soon. We will get to the vaccine in a minute. I promise we will. But a word about the reaction you saw today in stocks. Depending on who you talk to, somewhere between 70 and 80% of all the trades on Wall Street are algorithmic. That is, they are computer generated, keying off news or other trades, in fact. So the Pfizer news comes out this morning. The algorithms go crazy. And the session was off to the races. The Dow and the S&P strong all day, less strong at the close. The NASDAQ just didn't have it. We will have the details when we do the numbers. So, the vaccine. Pfizer and its German partner BioNTech made the announcement this morning, as you know, 90% effectiveness, which is great, honestly, and totally unexpected. Also, not entirely expected, though, the amount of data and information sharing these companies have done. Trial blueprints, the breakdown of trial subjects and their ethnicities, and whether these companies are taking money from the government. Because, as Marketplace's Scott Tong reports, transparency matters to a highly skeptical public.
51% of Americans say they would definitely or probably take a vaccine, according to a September poll from the Pew Research Center. So to build public trust, Pfizer and other vaccine makers shared with the public some details of their trials. Who's tested, how many, how they're monitored, how to measure success.
I put a lot of pressure, as did others, to get those protocols transparent and released.
Dr. Eric Topol is head of innovative medicine at Scripps Research. He applauds Pfizer for waiting till it had enough data before going public on Sunday.
So the fact that this was done right and it didn't interfere with the election, it's much more auspicious and important. It wasn't used as a prop or a tool.
Pfizer also says it worked to diversify study participants. 42% are from racially and ethnically diverse backgrounds. Drug discovery chemist Derek Lowe says that's important because many in the African-American community have harbored suspicions about vaccines ever since the government's Tuskegee syphilis experiments decades ago, conducted on black men who were neither informed of the study nor treated with effective drugs.
Which was a medical disaster, an ethical and moral disaster, and it has messed up the relationship between that community and drug research ever since.
As for funding, many vaccine firms took R&D money from the government, though Pfizer did not. The next big test, says Jennifer Miller at the Yale School of Medicine, comes when drug companies release their data.
So that other scientists who the public trust can go in, replicate findings, and communicate them to the public, and, you know, hopefully build appropriate trust in a vaccine.
Enough trust to slow the pandemic. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
We talked a lot about what's going to happen in this economy if there isn't another relief bill coming out of Washington, which it still looks like is up in the air at best. But there is relief from the CARES Act that passed back in March that still hasn't made it to people. People who met certain income thresholds were supposed to get $1,200 from the government. But as many as 12 million people haven't yet gotten those checks, including low-income Americans who likely need the money the most and are most likely to spend it and get it out into the economy. Lydia DePillis is an economic policy reporter, and also she wrote about this for ProPublica. Welcome to the program.
Good to be here.
Who are these people, a lot of them, who have not gotten a stimulus check to which they were entitled?
Well, there are a few buckets of different people. And to be clear, the IRS hasn't told us precisely who they are. What they have told us is that back in September, there were 9 million people who they think were probably eligible for the stimulus checks, but had not needed to file taxes in the last couple of years. So in order to claim them, would have to file in their online portal. Hmm. The other bucket of folks is people who the Treasury has said are not eligible for the stimulus checks, but courts have disagreed.
Right. Do me a favor and do a little compare and contrast here between this recession and the last time this was done, which was 2008.
Yeah. So in a lot of ways, it was very similar. Congress said, please send money to almost everyone. And in 2008, the checks were about half as big. They were targeted at the same income bracket, so folks who make below $75,000 and twice that if they're a couple. But there was a few other differences. One, in 2008, you could have your stimulus check withheld for previous tax debts. Hmm. This time, Congress didn't require that. So other than child support payments, the whole check should go to you. But this time, Treasury decided to carve out a few groups that Congress didn't tell it to. So that would be the other primary difference.
Mm-hmm. How much of the failure to communicate here, as it were, with people who are entitled to these checks or ought to have them is actually a question of IRS marketing, right? And people understanding and coming to learn that they are eligible for these benefit checks.
Right. So the IRS told me in the course of producing this story that they don't have an independent marketing budget. Unlike some other federal agencies, this is something they had to do entirely in-house. So while they did try to reach out through partners and do some kind of Facebook advertising, they weren't like putting billboards up or doing anything on the order of what you would need to reach folks who were totally outside the financial system. And those are the folks who, of course, need this money most.
Right. Outside the financial system, also not as attuned to the news as a lot of people in this economy are. I mean, you know, there's a wealth of news, but not all of it gets to people who need it.
Right. And one constituency they really tried to reach was homeless people, for whom $1,200 would be completely transformative. And not only do those people usually not have smartphones, some of them do. And even if you did have a smartphone, the portal that you need to apply for doesn't work on a smartphone, unfortunately. Hmm. And those people, the usual place they would go to get information and access the internet, like libraries, were closed down during the pandemic. So it was even harder to reach people than it would have been in other normal circumstances.
All right. So let's do a little solutions journalism here. If you know someone or if you are someone who believes they should have had this check but hasn't gotten one, where do you go? What do you do? Who do you talk to?
Right. So you can still apply, and you have until November 21st to apply through their online portal, which you can access pretty easily through irs.gov. You can call their hotlines, which hopefully should be less busy as more and more people get themselves taken mm-hmm. care of. But you deserve the money, and the IRS wants to give it to you.
Lydia DePillis at ProPublica. Lydia, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Two things before we go on. Number one, tomorrow morning early, the Marketplace Morning Report, David Brancaccio and the gang, getting you everything you need to know to start your economic day. Also, number two, if you miss us on the radio, podcast, people, podcast. Coming up.
I lie down on the bottom set and then place the second set spikes down upon my bare chest.
Same here, man. Same here. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrials up 834 points today, just shy of 3%. I for sure thought it would have been the really happy music, but what do I know? 29,157 for the blue chips. The NASDAQ down 181 points, a little over 1.5%, 11,713. S&P 500 picked up 41 points, 1.1%, landed at 35.50. Big gainers included companies that stand to benefit from vaccines. Planet Fitness picked up 16 and a 10th percent. Holy cow. Royal Caribbean Group gained almost 29%. Pfizer itself, 7.6%. The big losers, companies have done well under lockdown. Amazon, down 5%. Netflix, down 8.5%. Zoom, down 17.3%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate minority leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It wasn't just stocks that rallied today on that vaccine news from Pfizer. Crude oil, the U.S. benchmark West Texas Intermediate, rose almost 9% today. News that will certainly be celebrated in Midland, Texas, about as close as you can get to the center of oil and gas production in this economy. A lot of that production, though, is by fracking, which was talked about a lot in the campaign, as you know. And while President-elect Biden says he does not want to ban fracking outright, producers in the biggest oil field in the United States are preparing themselves for some more regulation. Marketplace's Andy Euler caught up with some of the folks in Midland that he's been talking to hear what is on their minds.
Petroleum historian Diana Hinton has lived in the Midland area since 1973. She's written a number of books on the industry and says there's always concern in this part of the country, which is overwhelmingly Republican, when Democrats take office in D.C.
But this one is new.
She says that's mostly because environmental concerns and climate change have now become a big part of the public discussion. And fracking, which has made oil companies a lot of money in the past decade, is an important issue for a lot of people.
And so there are a lot of important things for the industry to be concerned about now that weren't as much a matter of concern, let's say, 10 years ago.
I think there is a fear out there that Biden is going to just shut down the whole oil industry.
Grant Swartzwelder is president of OTA Compression Environmental, an oil field environmental consulting firm.
If he does that, then yes, it would hurt me. It'd hurt the whole industry. But logically speaking, that's really, really hard to see that really happening.
He says there were a lot of regulatory rollbacks during the Trump administration, but they were more about how strictly the rules were enforced than changes to the rules themselves. In the coming years, he expects more fines and more stringent inspections. Diana Hinton says the Midland community knows that more regulation will likely increase the cost of doing business at a time when the price of oil is just $40 a barrel.
What they are more concerned about is that as a town, we have not diversified away from the petroleum industry. We depend absolutely on the oil industry for our prosperity.
This political change is happening as COVID-19 depresses demand for oil and gas around the world, and Russia and Saudi Arabia continue to add more supply to the market. I'm Andy Euler for Marketplace.
Most K-12 public schools in this country are funded based on their daily enrollment and attendance figures. And in normal times, kids go to class, answer up when attendance is taken, or maybe they don't answer up, I guess, and the money flows. But in this not normal academic year, when something like half of all public school students are attending classes online, how does that funding puzzle work? Marketplace's Eric Barris has that story.
Morcese Beasley, the superintendent of Clayton County Schools in the Atlanta area, expected around 3,600 kindergartners this year, only 3,036 enrolled. He's been telling parents,
"You can't skip kindergarten and then next year come in first grade and you think you're going to get this host of services, and funding has been negatively impacted because of your actions."
Like many school districts across the country, his district's funding comes from enrollment and attendance figures. Most public schools get their funding from three primary sources: local taxes, less than 10% from the federal government, and about half from the state. But COVID-19 has slammed state budgets.
The overwhelming majority of that funding, like 90% or more, comes from sales and income taxes.
Maria Jose Romero is a researcher at Pace University. Now, as we get closer to the halfway mark in the academic year, some schools are all virtual, some are in person, some are a mix. Homeschooling has gained momentum. Private school enrollments are up in some places. And parents continue to make all kinds of decisions, including parents of kindergartners who have decided to sit the year out. All of that will have a continuing financial impact on public schools, says Hetty Chang, director of the nonprofit Attendance Works.
What will states do next year as they determine how they will fund schools in the 21-22 school year?
One concern for school districts is that screen fatigue may drive down attendance as the year drags on. There's already evidence of that, says Ben Court, an education consultant with EAB.
Students were showing up for classes, but people are now getting tired.
In Georgia, Superintendent Morcese Beasley says right now, virtual attendance is steady. But with lower enrollment, he knows next year's finances may be unpredictable.
We'll just have to make those decisions at that time.
Public schools received CARES Act funding in the spring. Requests for more help from the federal government have so far stalled. So for now, every student who shows up or logs in adds to the bottom line. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
These are tough times in the performing arts. Theaters are closed, concert halls are closed, and for a very specific set of artists, even the streets are kind of closed. Buskers, as street performers are called over in London, have seen tourist numbers plummet during this pandemic, and the whole country's just entered its second lockdown. But the buskers are peeved for another reason. The local government in London's West End is planning to limit street entertainment because, it says, buskers are noisy and sometimes dangerous. From London Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
In a piazza in Covent Garden, a trendy shopping precinct in London's West End, busker Pete Kolofsky limbers up for his act. Pete used to work for a circus. Now he earns his living on the street, juggling knives and performing other similar routines.
This is my bed of nails. The bottom section is about 900 six-inch nails. I lie down on the bottom set and then place the second set spikes down upon my bare chest.
He could soon face an unexpected occupational hazard. His bed of nails, his knives, his bullwhip and fire-eating equipment could be deemed illegal under the proposed new regulations.
Me personally, that'd be the end of the line. As they want to remove, like, ban so-called dangerous props, that's almost my entire show.
It's not just the knife jugglers and fire eaters like Pete who'd be hit by the new rules. Even conventional musicians like folk singer David Fisher could be affected by other provisions in the council plan. He says it sounds the death knell for the London busker.
So this is going to put hundreds of people out of a job.
Under the plan, there will be only 25 busking sites allowed in the whole of the West End.
There's simply not enough room for all these buskers in the West End to keep to these pitches and to abide by the stringent conditions that the council have decided to set for them.
Also under the plan, buskers will have to be licensed and have $2.5 million worth of public liability insurance in case they injure passers-by. But isn't the local council at least right to be worried about public safety, especially where circus-type buskers are involved? This is the sound of Mark Rothman, who used to perform in Covent Garden, juggling three operating chainsaws. A bit on the dangerous side, Mark?
Yeah, I don't want to give the game away, but the blade didn't have any teeth on it. It was a chain, a smooth chain. So, yeah, you couldn't really cut anything with it.
And he says the knife juggler's knives are blunt, and thanks to weight distribution, the bed of nails is nothing like as perilous as it looks.
What we do isn't dangerous, although it does have to look dangerous, otherwise you can't get a crowd. Now the council are banning anything that looks dangerous, which is insane.
In a statement, the council said, "We're not banning busking, but we deal with around 1,800 complaints a year over excessive noise and overcrowding caused by street entertainment. We simply want to strike the right balance." But the visitors and residents I met in Covent Garden, among them Lisa Bailey, Edward Hughes and Elizabeth Wright, all sided with the buskers against the council.
Don't get me going. Haven't they got enough important things to do than worrying about busking? And talking about overcrowding, it's just ridiculous. It brings people into the city, and it's what cities are all about.
I think it should be allowed to go on as it is. You know, it brings life to the city.
It's just a bit of fun, and obviously they make a bit of a living out of it. I don't think it necessarily needs to be restricted.
With the UK once again in lockdown, the buskers are already bracing for another big hit to their earnings. But they fear if the council crackdown goes ahead, street entertainment in this city will wane and their earnings will never recover. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, which comes with the caveat that newspaper and wire service reporters who write the stories don't usually write the headlines, but this one is a doozy. From Reuters, three factually true items unfortunately lumped together. Here is the headline. Gun stocks tumble after upbeat vaccine news, lack of civil unrest. No civil unrest. Check. Upbeat vaccine news, also check. Gun stocks, Smith & Wesson down 9% today, Sturm Ruger off 7%. I mean, you feel bad, right? Because you know Reuters wants that headline back in a big, bad way. All right, we got to go, but here is your moment of economic context to start the week. Lest you had forgotten, the trade war is still a thing. China, yes, definitely, of course. Also, though, Europe. The European Union announced today it's going to put tariffs on almost $4 billion worth of Boeing planes and some other stuff. It is a straight-up retaliatory thing, totally approved by the World Trade Organization in response to U.S. tariffs on Airbus planes last year, also totally approved by the World Trade Organization. One imagines they are looking to settle this thing. Our daily production team includes Andy Corbin, Ali Famria Hollenhorst, Sean McHenry, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.